Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, and welcome back to Geeking In. I am Jay, I am your party host. So grab your bourbon, your beer, or your brew, half a sugar and almond milk, just the way you like it, and settle in while we talk about some of the stuff that's going on at the moment. I am joined, as always, by the incredible, the invincible, the infamous, our futurist, our Tony Stark. How you doing, T?
Hello, listeners. Hello, gents. I'm doing very well. Happy to be here.
And we're happy to have you. And we obviously are joined by Mr. Fantastic himself, our flexible friend, the pajama prince of pause that was promised, and the guy that's managed to get Backstreet Boys song stuck on my head by sending a GIF in the chat as we started. How you doing, B?
Oh, I've been to the dentist.
And that is a shout out to all of our dentist listeners from Hem & Hems to Dublin to Oregon. Please continue to rate, review, subscribe, and share so that B can continue to afford the dental work he needs.
I mean, it felt like the setup to a joke, like there was going to be a punchline beyond just that.
It's hurting too much, so yeah, we'll just go with it.
We will do. We'll just keep drilling into the conversation and, and go from there.
No filling in or anything like that, please.
And if you want to get involved in the conversation and send bad dentistry puns to B, at Geeking In Pod is where to do that on Twitter and Instagram. And whilst there, you will see the Linktree link that takes you to everything we are, including Teesprings, where we sell our mugs, our masks, and our T-shirts. The T-shirts come in multiple colours, a rainbow of colours, if you will. And speaking of the rainbow, one of the Batman family has come out as bisexual in a new Batman comic. So, Batman, Urban Legends number 6, follows Tim Drake as he rescues his friend Bernard from a cult that's been kidnapping teenagers across Gotham. After he's cut free, Bernard, who's been training in combat, helps Robin make short work of the villains. But it also begins a major realization in the heat of a moment. With Bernard's life potentially on the line and then him fighting on Robin's side, Tim begins to understand he has deep feelings for his friend in something that a lot of readers who've been following this saw the beginnings of in Urban Legends number 4, following Tim's breakup with, spoiler, Stephanie Brown. That's the character's name. It's not that.
Not a Stephanie spoiler. Brown,
yes. So the episode, the comic ends with Tim deciding to explore his relationship with Bernard, going out on a proper date, and starting to kind of see how that works through. Now, T, this is always one of those things that if you establish, if you have an existing property, existing superhero come out as part of the LGBT community, it's considered some kind of stunt. If it's a new character who's introduced as who's LGBT, it's also considered some kind of stunt. So there is no real kind of way through on this. How are you feeling about Tim's realization about his sexuality?
So, it's in my mind, this is the perfect way to sort of do it. So, firstly, Tim's a young character. I mean, Tim Drake's been around forever, but, you know, the DC characters don't age. It's a young character who you're getting to see go through the journey of realizing he's bisexual. You've not retconned it in to say, you know, this has always been the case. We've just never mentioned it. You know, and I think so it makes sense and it feels natural. You know, you aren't I mean, to be honest, like retconning is normal with comics anyway, so that really shouldn't be an issue anyway. But in this case, you know, you haven't suddenly said, oh, he never dated Spoiler, or Spoiler used to be a man, or anything like that. It's just, you know, you're actually getting to see him go through it, and that's really smart and a really cool way of doing it. And I'm glad it's Tim, because Tim is my favorite Robin. I feel like Tim Drake, in many ways, is my Robin. That's the Robin that I read about the most. He's my favorite Robin. And a really cool character. He's the Robin who himself discovered Bruce Wayne's identity. Bruce Wayne's identity. Bruce who? Bruce what? Bruce why?
Why is Gamora?
Yeah. And he, you know, he didn't take up the mantle just because he fancied it. It's because he felt Batman needed it. He could see this kind of path Batman was going on to after Jason Todd died. So really cool character. That really makes sense. That's a cool way of doing it. Yeah, great stuff. And we've seen Tim go through a hell of a lot. You know, you've seen him. He's always been quite adamant that, you know, his future is not in being Batman. It's not, I'm going to be Nightwing next and then graduate onto being Batman. It's my own journey, my own character. You've seen him be like a leader of the Teen Titans. It's a really well-established character, but also young, and it's cool that you get to see the journey of him discovering his bisexuality. I mean, people are going to moan about it because people often moan about this stuff. But this is great. Sounds great.
There is going to be backlash and support in equal measures in this, as you would expect. B, how are you feeling about it? You're a huge Batman fan. How are you feeling about the statement on Tim's sexuality?
I think it's really good. I think, you know, certain characters do need to move with the times, and this is one way of doing it, and making it more real for today's world. I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's T, as you said, I think it's a good character to have this kind of exploration because of the age, because of the character, because of the reflective nature of the character as well.
Yeah, very much so.
You know, he is someone who is built around asking questions and you know, kind of drilling into those kind of thoughts. So, you know, it matches, I think, very well that he would have that kind of, you know, I'm feeling very, you know, there was a panic and the fear when I thought he was at risk. And why is that? What was that beyond everyone else I've saved? And how is that a thing? And a bravery in the character who would be willing to kind of take that step and acknowledge that there might be something to explore.
I would have guessed Dick Grayson when you started this sentence, but it makes sense for it to be Tim. It's great. See, we talked about this before around retconning characters and sort of, you know, being more inclusive, because you always go back to the classics, don't you?
Yeah.
And if they make a new MCU, it's probably going to be Tony Stark again and Iron Man again. Sometimes you do have to build on existing characters.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is very much about trying to expand that out in a natural way, in a way that makes sense to the story. So, you know, Dick Grayson, for instance, would be a more radical shift because he is famous for relationships with various women across the DCEU. So it is about, you know, where these stories make sense to go and how you can bring some of this is part of who they are. It isn't a character trait, and there's so many that when they're introduced at the moment, you know, it's that element of they almost state as part of their bio. bisexual Tim Drake, rather than it just being, you know, a natural part of them. But do you think there's going to be much of a fallout from it?
I shouldn't think so. I mean, we've had other characters, and I don't think there's been that much of a fallout over it before. So why should this be any different?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a little bit of pushback from people who I really don't think read the comics when they do this kind of pushback, about taking an established character and introducing something about their character that was unknown, like, for instance, you know, bisexuality. So there's going to be, you know, not my Robin kind of things, I would imagine. But it'll be interesting to kind of see what happens in the future. I hope it's my fear always with this, especially with kind of James Tynion moving on and things like that, is that these things could kind of not be continued on. So, you know, two writers down the line and he's back with Stephanie and it's all just kind of that one time he did one thing.
That's always the risk, isn't it, with writers changing around, because they always like to have their own spin and, you know, make sure their stamp is clear for everyone to see. So let's hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah. I'm hoping that it's kind of strong enough that it won't, but, you know, we'll find out. We'll see. So T was saying that his favourite Robin is Tim Drake. B, who's your favourite?
Dick.
You're an original guy, are you?
I am. Harping back to the original, you know, Adam West shows, I think Dick Grayson is brilliant.
Was that your introduction to Robin? Was it through the Adam West show?
Repeats, yes, T.
Yeah. No, I wasn't going there. I wasn't going there, but yeah, that's a fair question.
Not seeing the originals run in whatever it was, 66. No. Yeah, I mean, it was my introduction to both Batman and Robin was the 1966 show, and on repeat, obviously. I think my favorite, you know, Tim Drake was a fantastic Robin. I really enjoyed Damian Wayne as Robin, especially with
Dick Grayson as Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a cool dynamic.
I thought that was a really good kind of combination. I liked the Boy Scout and the assassin, both trying to live up to, you know, and make a father proud who was kind of emotionally stunted and wasn't going to give either of them the validation they sought.
So, Dick, similar to you guys, so Dick Grayson was the first Robin I knew about. But the first Robin I saw actually fleshed out as a character was Tim Drake.
Yeah.
So, Dick Grayson was just Batman's sidekick, and I didn't know much about his personality. And in a way, I don't think you got to see much of his personality until he kind of got pissed off and left and became Nightwing. Whereas Tim Drake as Robin was quite sort of fully realized. I think the first time I met him was after Azbat's. Yeah, when Azrael became Batman, Tim really blamed himself for it. And it was a really funny one because he designed Azrael's previous costume and he sort of convinced himself that he designed it based on the costume he was inspired without realizing based on the costume of another villain that they'd fought. And then he thought, because of that, I made Azrael costume villainous and maybe I therefore made him into this nutcase. And that level of fucking self-doubt and paranoia, I was like, oh my God,
power,
I get you.
Clothes.
Yeah, power of clothes. But, you know, just that kind of took it all on himself and doubted himself. And I just thought it was really, really well done. So Tim Drake is very much the detective, right? And that's one of the cool things I think we've seen about the Robins, because you've seen, you know, Nightwing's gymnastics, his kind of fighting and all of that is sort of unparalleled. Obviously, Jason Todd's got his more sort of rage and all that. And Tim is ultimately the detective, the smart one. I mean, they overdo it sometimes because he's also a computer genius and he's also a tactical genius and he's also an everything genius. And you know,
are you saying that's only okay when it's Batman?
Yeah, exactly. He's trained to become an expert in everything. Batman's ballet dancing expert.
Luckily, I spent 14 years becoming immune to this poison just in case something like this ever happened.
Exactly. But yeah, no, I think that's when they can't really think of how to use Tim. But yeah. Oh, okay. Quick question for you guys. The Teen Titans cartoon, you know, the anime style one, Teen Titans Go.
Yeah.
Which Robin is that to you?
Tim Drake.
Okay. B?
Yeah, I'd say Tim Drake.
It's interesting because they, you know, they obviously never mention an alter ego. And the idea was, you know, they didn't want to confuse kids. They want to have two separate names or whatever. So Robin is Robin. But yeah, it is still very much Tim Drake to us. And that, to me, is another sign of how strong the characterization of Tim Drake is, that in this completely different medium, you still see that, you know, it's the character, even though he's not been named.
I mean, for me, I think it's the outfit, because it's the Tim Drake outfit.
He's not in shorts.
No, or at least not often.
Mm-hmm.
On the Teen Titan Go wiki, it's Dick Grayson.
Oh, my God. There you go.
Interesting,
because the teen Titan team that he's with, so that's Cyborg, Raven, Beast Boy, and Starfire, that's Dick Grayson's Teen Titans. Tim Drake's Teen Titans were Wonder Girl and Superboy, and not Cyborg. They did still have what's his name, the animal guy? I've just said it, I forgot
Beast
immediately.
Boy. Beast Boy,
there you go. They still had Beast Boy and Raven again. But yeah, it's a very different team.
Yeah, that's a point, because the live action Titan show is Dick Grayson, isn't it?
Yep.
But they've got very different supporting Titans.
No, again, you've got Starfire, you've got Beast Boy. You didn't have Cyborg, and possibly because Cyborg was in the film at the same time, and DC sometimes be reluctant to do that, aren't they? And you've got Raven. Who else have you got on there? There is Superboy, but with the exception of Superboy, and he's sort of a
Black
entry. Hawk and Dove. That's all very much Dick Grayson's time.
And Wonder Girl. But they've got Wonder Girl, though.
No, they've got Donna Aqualad, Troy Wonder Girl.
Donna Troy. Yes.
And Tim Drake's Wonder Girl wasn't Donna Troy. It was, I've forgotten, it was the blonde girl.
Yeah, I want to say Cassie, but I'm not sure if that's right.
Cassie was Batgirl. Cassie Kane. I wonder if they're both Cassie. I can't remember, but anyway, different Wonder Girls. So it is very much, I think, Dick Grayson's team that are in the Titans TV show.
Tim Drake Robin does appear in Teen Titans Go in an episode called The Best Robin.
That show's so fucking meta, man. It's so good.
But so there we go. It's Dick Grayson in Teen Titans.
The only thing that show's missing is a little bit of a message, I think. You know, it's just pure chaos. So in a way, it's a great one to like watch with your kids, because they're entertained to the chaos of it all, and you've got all the references. But also at the end of it, there's no positive, you know, message that comes from all the other good shows that are around. And knowing is half the battle.
you just feel that there should be that kind of lesson at the end of all kids' TV
makes
cartoons.
Me feel slightly less guilty as a parent letting them watch TV.
I'll just assume that there's a moral in there that they're picking up.
Yeah.
So my niece and nephew picked up Baby Hands as a moral from Teen Titans, the movie. go to the movies.
Excellent.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And how's that?
Have you not seen?
I haven't, no.
Oh, it's such a good movie. You have to
watch it. Really is. It is very good. It's, you know, Jay, it's a bit like Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, actually, now that I think about it. Right, B?
How so?
So it's them, you know, and a movie's being made about them, and they kind of go and fight, and it's sort of the same kind of setup in a way.
Oh. And that's the one with Nick Cage finally playing Superman, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It is indeed.
Okay. I might search that out at some point. Because why wouldn't I? But yeah, there we go. So Tim Drake, Robin, baby hands. obviously the one thing those baby hands would be missing is retractable adamantium claws coming through them.
God, we got to hear the process this time, ladies and gentlemen.
Very good.
Actually, him going, Tim Drake, no, Rotten Robin, no, baby, ooh, baby hands, yep.
I was trying to recap so it didn't, so when I was starting to talk about baby hands, it didn't sound like I was the deranged one.
That was a peek behind the curtain, I love it.
The cogs were wearing and all sorts. But speaking of metallic claws and Wolverine, Hugh Jackman has been talking about and addressing some of the fan theories and other rumors about his return to the role under the MCU banner. He was asked outright by Jake's Takes about the rumors of him coming back in. And he said, there's nothing in my inbox from Kevin Feige, which means it's probably, no matter what idea I came up with, not on the table. Mm. Let's just be clear, I realized before we shot Logan, I was like, we got the idea, we knew what it was going to be ish, and I thought, this is it. And that really helped me. It helped me knowing I was going into my last season, and this was my last season, and made the most of it. And still a character I hold close to my heart, but I know it's done. Tell that to whoever you want to. Please tell it to Ryan Reynolds, because he doesn't believe anything and thinks I'm joking. When asked about when he decided it was time to put the claws down, Jackman said, when I saw Deadpool, I was like, wow, that's cool. It's just a matter of time. It's a bit like you're at the greatest party you've ever been at. You've been dancing for an hour and a half. You've gone just like it's time to go. If I stay any longer, it's going to get ugly. And it's time to go. And on the way home, someone calls you and says, they just got put Michael Jackson on. You've got to get back here. And a little part of you goes, I like Michael Jackson. But then you just go, I want to go to bed.
That's so oddly specific. I love it.
Weird, isn't it? Yeah. So, B, from all of that, whenever we get to Mutants, which might be announced at D23 this year.
Fingers crossed.
Is rumoured to be one of the 10 shows on the slate for D23. It sounds like when we get to Wolverine, it won't be Hugh Jackman. How are you feeling about that?
I think I come to terms with Mr. Jackman moving on and hanging up the claws. But you know, he made that role so iconic, so him. It's going to be hard to envisage anyone else in that role. So whatever Marvel, and I'm sure they're going to do it really, really well. And I think the viewing public are quite fickle as well. So I think they'll choose wisely whoever steps into those shoes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one because it has become such a role that's his. even to the old man Logan style stuff they did in Logan.
Mm.
And in a world where you're introducing multiverses, you know, never say never on anything, on any cameo in the world that you ever want ever. But T, bearing in mind that, you know, trying to find someone to replace Hugh Jackman's going to be very, very difficult. Do you go a completely different way and do the Laura Wolverine instead?
Oh, that's an interesting thought. I mean, my thought was more that Wolverine doesn't have to be the central character in the X-Men franchise that he's or that he has been. So thinking about sort of the early cuts, if you think back, I don't know, just before Frank Miller's run, Wolverine was just this kind of berserker guy. You know, he wasn't a big part of the X-Men. In fact, I think Frank Miller did Miller not want to write him because he was just like, who the fuck is this berserker guy? And they're going to convince him about, oh, you can write Samurai Past and all this kind of stuff. So I don't think the trick is to replace Hugh Jackman. And I don't, because, you know, as you say, he made the role actually, you know, that they're synonymous. Yeah. I just think we could have a story more centered on Cyclops now or whoever, you know, because no one's going to mind that James Marsden.
Yep.
Yeah. James Marsden's been replaced or whatever. Bring in the X-Men. Excellent. Bringing in the X-Men isn't that, hey, we're waiting for, you know, the man with the claws to come out. There's just so many interesting characters, so many interesting people in the X-Men to watch. And, you know, I want to see Storm be the central character this time. I think that'd be amazing. And when Wolverine does eventually come along, I think, you know, some time needs to pass. It can be a character that kind of builds up and is interesting in their own right. And yeah, why not? Why not introduce Laura first? But I think the thing you said around the cameos and the multiverse is a big deal as well, Jay, because, you know, now it's sort of, it doesn't matter. So there is probably within the MCU multiverses, within the MCU omniverse or whatever, there probably is, you know, Hugh Jackman Wolverine. And maybe there'll be a cameo and maybe there won't. You know, it's sort of anything's open. You know, we saw J. Jonah Jameson turn up at the end of Far From Home. So, you know, you're seeing these crossovers all over the place. It's fine. I don't think fans should be sort of pining for more Jackman Wolverine. I think we got a lot of it. I think it was great. I think it was very much of its time. And I think he stepped away just at the right time as well.
Yeah, I mean, so he was at the vanguard of the explosion of superhero films with the original mm-hmm. X-Men films.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously was front and center because in the 90s, Wolverine was the biggest selling character in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, every other book seemed to be a Wolverine book or have Wolverine in it or something. And that's
a great issue of Runaways where Wolverine, it just starts with Wolverine for no apparent reason. And then they go up to him and it's like, how the fuck do you have time to be here? You're on like six different teams. You're on the Avengers. You're in the X-Men. How the fuck do you have time to be standing on this rooftop? And it's so meta. And it's obviously like to bring in the readers, have a Wolverine cameo.
But it is, and that was the 90s model was, you know, more Wolverine.
Yeah.
So there will be a lot of fans coming to this who have a very strong affection for the character, having never read the character.
Mm.
Which is going to be an interesting one for Marvel, I think, because up until now you can introduce whoever you want in a cinematic way. Because it's the comic fans who have that kind of regard for them. So it's going to be interesting to kind of, you know, bringing in film fans, especially bearing in mind, you know, the first X-Men film was 21 years ago now.
Jesus.
yeah. So it is going to be kind
God
of...
damn.
The original X-Men film's old enough to drink in America.
My bones have just started creaking hearing this.
Is that the metal that you've grafted on to try and be cool? So, yeah, I think that's going to be quite an interesting kind of walk through. But, you know, it's very strange how there are some characters that we get very, very territorial over recasting. And others like James Bond, for instance, that's just what happens. You know, different people play him, and that's absolutely fine. So yeah, I'm very interested to see them go in a different way. And I think you're right. I mean, I'd love them to kind of do a different and more varied story, with some of the more developed characters, in the sense that it's not just kind of, you know, I can't remember my past. And I say that, you know, being one of the super mega fanboys who bought a whole load of comics just because Wolverine was on the cover.
Do you think Disney will resist the temptation of asking Marvel to, you know, try and cash in on that cash cow a little bit more?
Well, you see, this thing, I don't know if it's as big a cash cow now as it was. And I think in the world of the stories they're telling, you could make some very, very good, compelling stories with characters who haven't been explored, like Storm. I mean, Storm's an incredibly, ridiculously overpowered character to the point where she's just, in the comics, just terraformed Mars. Yeah, and in the modern world with modern CG and modern storytelling, is far more of a brilliant character to write and to build into, especially with her history and everything, than Logan probably is. You know, you don't have to have her kind of doing, you know, nothing but a line about what happens to toads when they're hit by lightning.
Great line.
So there is so much more you can do. I mean, Cyclops has always been incredibly one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. As many dimensions as he has eyes. So I think all of these are going to be quite interesting to see. And then even with the newer films, you know, you could see them kind of trying to flesh out Mystique and a few others. So I think there's different ways they could go about it. I think it'll be interesting to see where they jump into the stories, and whether they take kind of, you know, some of the Hickman stuff that's going on as their launch point. But the new X-Men team that's only just been launched has Wolverine, but it's Laura Kinney. It's not Logan.
That's a really interesting point about using some of the newer comics, actually. So if we think back to the 90s cartoon, where they took all the Jim Lee designs and literally just burnt through all of the classic Claremont and Byrne stories, right? And then in the movies, because those were the classics and they were kind of double classics, because you had people who grew up on those comics, and then you had people who'd grown up watching the Fox Kids cartoon, and it's the same stories, so they try and do those in the films, and that's why you've had like two different Dark Phoenix sagas and both shit. And actually, there have been so many interesting stories since then that they've just not explored in film. The closest they came was the mutant cure stuff in that awful X-Men 3, which was from Whedon's run, wasn't it? But yeah, this, like, as you say, the stories are so interesting and so complex. I mean, sometimes the problems with X-Men comics is they're a bit too convoluted, they're a bit impenetrable. And I think an introduction into the MCU is a great way to take all of these concepts, really simplify them down, and retell them in really interesting ways, because there'd be so many people who are X-Men fans who have not read any of the recent, any have never picked up a Hickman comic, and just because they've found them hard to kind of get into, even though you're reading like other comics. So yeah, it's an exciting time actually, to not to see Wolverine on screen again, but it's an exciting time to get to see those stories being told.
Yeah, and you know, it'll be interesting that the theory seems to be that the title of the TV the series rather than the film will be mutants rather than X-Men. And that it'll be interesting to kind of see how they not just introduce mutants, which is something we've hypothesized about at great length, but you know, the allegories, obviously, when it was being written in the 60s, were about, you know, racism and race.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be interesting to see what they pull as their kind of allegory for this one, for a 2021 version of it.
Yeah.
And kind of see where it goes from there. I mean, is it immigrants? Is it, you know, sexuality? Is it something else that that gives you that kind of way into the story?
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be really interesting to kind of see how it breaks down, I think. But D23 is on the horizon. The rumor are that there are 10 shows that will be announced, including...
Is D23 the stakeholder one, or the shareholder one, or is it the other one?
D23 is the convention.
Okay.
But it's what they're trying to almost set up as their... we don't need San Diego Comic-Con, we've got our own thing.
Yeah.
And
it's pretty true. I mean, Comic-Con's so dead with everyone announcing things of their own things.
And that's it. And so I think that'll be interesting to kind of watch through. But things like Nova are thought to be in that mix. Mm. Ghost Rider, potentially. Sounds like it might be a Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider.
Interesting.
Bring back Nicolas Cage.
Oh, yes, please.
Oh, God. If you bring him back, don't blame me, listeners. All right.
No, it's too late. He's out there. I'm going to cut that mea culpa out and just have you maybe three or four times in a row saying, bring back Nicolas Cage, bring back Nicolas Cage, bring back Nicolas Cage.
It's like the Candyman is going to be knocking on your window now.
Yes.
Yeah, nice.
But yeah, so it'll be interesting to see, and it'll be interesting to see how the mutants play out. You know, huge amount of speculation, continues to be a huge amount of speculation. So we shall see. We shall see how it brings through. But one story we do know how it all fits together is the Suicide Squad, which B and I both have had an opportunity to watch. So we'll talk about that. However, we will do that at the end, so that we can be spoilerific with our conversation. So if you have not seen it and wish to, then we shall do our recommendations and we shall wish you good night, and then we shall talk about the Suicide Squad. So, B, what's your recommendation this week?
So my recommendation this week is a 1984 film starring three men who fight ghosts.
Only three?
Four.
Has it been a while since you watched the film, B?
Well, it was Monday, I think I watched it.
I mean, in fairness, you've been through the dentist since then.
Yeah, there's been a whole lot of Novocaine between here and there.
I'm recommending Ghostbusters, the original. Such a classic movie, and such a great cast, brilliantly acted, brilliantly written, still holds up in this day and age. Such a terrific movie.
I mean, a great recommendation, and very timely because the Afterlife trailers are dropping. We're not far away from that coming through.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about Ghostbusters 2 and the Ghostbusters remake?
I liked Ghostbusters 2. Went to watch it at the cinema. I remember it quite vividly. Remake.
There's quite a big gap between the two films, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not what we expect now, I suppose.
5 years?
Something like that. So when you watched Ghostbusters, it wasn't the Ghostbusters franchise, it was just a film, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it made a shed load of money, so they made it again.
Hmm.
But the reboot, no thank you.
Which reboot? Sorry, this is the Kirsten Wiig, that one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. How did you feel, T, on Ghostbusters 2 and the remake?
Yes, I kind of watched the first two Ghostbusters sort of together. I mean, it, as a kid, you know, if you know what I mean, there wasn't a gap between them or whatever. So it's my memories of the two are very sort of interconnected. And I'm not even sure I could for sure tell you which scene is from which film, if you know what I mean. So I see them in one light and I enjoy them very much. The remake didn't work for me. It wasn't very funny. I didn't know what it was trying to do, to be honest. It was a bit of a slog to try and get through. It didn't capture the magic of the old film, but in fairness, I watched the old film as a kid, and that was very much a film, you know, it was exciting in that sense. And it wasn't funny either, so it was, I don't know, it didn't work for me.
I'd go out to say I'm a fan of all three. I was trying to choose my words very carefully there, but I'll be strong in my stance on it. You know, the original Ghostbusters is obviously by far and away the best of the three. There's an interesting kind of take on Ghostbusters 2 about, you know, whether Bill Murray seems to feel that he was lied to about the film and tricked into being into it, which is kind of one of the reasons he's been so adamant about not being involved since then.
What's the story here? What happened to Bill Murray?
Drastic script changes meant the film he thought he was doing and the film he ended up doing weren't quite the same.
Right.
And it became a little bit more of a collection of versions of the script rather than what he thought he'd signed up to do.
Right.
Some disappointment from his side, which is why he was so, for so long, has been so strong against a Ghostbusters 3. Mm. Even when they thought they had agreements in place. It's not quite materialized until now. It'll be interesting to see what the new one does and what brought him back. The Kristen Wiig one, I thought was quite good in points and quite fun overall. I was a huge fan of Kate McKinnon's performance throughout it. I think if it was a film that wasn't called Ghostbusters, it would have landed very differently. I think probably would have found its audience a little easier. The biggest thing I have against the remade Ghostbusters, I want to say 2016, is the absolutely abhorrent Fallout Boy cover of the theme song. And you know, I quite like Fallout Boy, but it was a horrible remake of the theme song, a horrible cover of the theme song. But yes, Ghostbusters is a great shout. On Netflix, I noticed, so definitely one to check out. T, what have you got for us this week?
So we sort of mentioned it already on the show. But seeing as we're talking Wolverine, I'm going to recommend the Old Man Logan comic. So you've seen parts of that, I guess, when you watched Logan, Hugh Jackman's final film. You may have listened potentially to the podcast that came out recently. So Marvel and Stitcher did their third or fourth podcast, except this time they turned it up a little bit and they turned it into Old Man Star-Lord. But it's just great, sort of, you know, set in the future tale of Wolverine, of Logan, you know, in a world that's got really, really fucked up. Hawkeye turns up at his door one day and they end up going on this kind of road trip across America, I think across a really fucked up America, where basically the supervillains have won. And it unpacks a little bit of how we got to that point. But it's also very much about sort of his journey and understanding the character. And it's great because you don't often get to see the character superheroes age, right? So you've had whatever happened to the Man of Tomorrow, the Alan Moore one. You had Whatever Happened to the Dark Knight that I think Neil Gaiman wrote for Batman, and you've got Old Man Logan. And although probably Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow is the more sort of critically acclaimed one, I think Old Man Logan is definitely my favorite of these, you know, future set stories. It's just a great read, and you don't really have to have read any other Marvel comics, I think, to get it, because it sets it up really well, and it's all kind of very cinematic, and quite brutal at times as well.
Absolutely, so, and quite scary. Some of the images that they do.
Yeah, and you know, it's shocking, man. It's shocking. It's well done, and there's not a lot of stuff out there like it. It's a really good book.
Yeah, it is, and quite a almost like a nihilistic Western at points.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, actually.
So, I mean, it is kind of, you know, if you're into any of your post-apocalyptic stuff, then, you know, what makes the superheroes go into retirement? Mm. You know, when the bad guys win. You know, it's definitely worth one to read through. So my recommendation, and I went last because I was going to see whether you stole this one, T. It's the 35th anniversary.
Oh my god!
Transformers the movie.
Oh my god!
Coming out in the cinema in the US.
T.
We've only talked about it 1,000 times this week.
And throughout, I mean, you know, what is there for me to say that we haven't said at length throughout this podcast, you know, throughout the length of the life of this podcast? You know, a changing of the guard of the Transformers comic, the Transformers cartoon, a movement into new merchandising opportunities, introducing new characters, getting rid of some of the old characters in some incredibly brutal, fairly tormenting for a small child watching the film kind of way. But just, you know, inch by inch perfection, really. You know, the soundtrack's incredible, the art's incredible. Orson Welles' last film appearance, you know, just an amazing film. Which everyone should watch, especially B. It is, you know, we've had various fun this week, just kind of shooting back random quotes from scenes all the way through. I've done the same with my brother, who loves the film every single bit as much as I do, and you know, we still have various kind of, you know, jokes that have lasted 35 years because of going to see this and you know how it works through. So my wholehearted recommendation is Transformers the movie 1986.
I might check that out.
I did see they've re-released it all again as the 35th. It's one of those that it must be. So I would imagine that it's up there with Star Wars and The Godfather as the films I've owned the most copies of because of, you know, the re-releases and all the rest of it. And there is part of me that's very itchy to get the 35th anniversary for no reason.
It's because you cannot have a perfect version, right? Because the thing was animated at different aspect ratios. So whichever one you get is going to be kind of wrong. And even that one they released where it switches aspect ratios constantly as you're watching is so fucking jarring.
But yes, those are our recommendations for the week. And I think they're all very, very good. So, we will leave you with them. We are going to say goodbye to T, and then B and I are going to discuss a film that didn't make any of our recommendations. I wonder if that tells us something about it. We will find out when we talk about the Suicide Squad. So, T.
Adios.
And we shall move on to the Suicide Squad. Released last week and in the US on HBO Max and in cinemas or theatres on Friday, The Suicide Squad, James Gunn's take on the Task Force X, is with us. B, what did you think?
It's very different to the first Suicide Squad. Not sure whether it kind of is a sequel, but it isn't.
It's... Yeah. So I mean, that's let's start there, because okay. It's quite a difficult film to get into talking about, I think. Even in a spoiler way that we're planning to talk about it. So you've got Joel Kinnaman back as Rick Flagg. You've got Margot Robbie back as Harley Quinn. Mm. Jay Courtney's back as Captain Boomerang. Viola Davis is back as Amanda Waller. So there is quite obviously a continuation from the original film, but it doesn't really feel as if it is a continuation. It doesn't really feel like a sequel, does it?
No, it doesn't. I mean, there's various like throwbacks when, obviously when Harley Quinn and Captain Boomerang see each other, it's like there's a little bit of an acknowledgement there. As if they know each other, but it's a fleeting acknowledgement, shall we say?
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice little moment of like, you know, and the answer apparently is road rage. But it is, it's kind of one of those kind of, you know, slight, and I guess that's the problem in the sense of you have to tell a story as to why Harley Quinn, who following the Emancipation of Harley Quinn Birds of Prey movie seemed to be in a different direction in her life, is back at Belle Reve prison as part of, you know, having to trade Task Force X missions to get time off of her sentence.
Yep. And, you know, the characters ever so slightly, there is a slight difference to Harley Quinn in this movie, I felt, anyway. You know, and I think all of the, but, you know, you'd expect that. It's a different director, different sees things in a different way. And James Gunn is a genius anyway. I do love his films.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, right from the outset, it was action all the way. Just not the action I expected.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it starts with, you know, the squad that we've seen put together, including, you know, TDK and Javelin and Weasel and Savant and... a few others all land on the beach of Quarto Maltese and basically just get wiped out.
Yep.
And it turns out that they are, in essence, the distraction for the second team led by Bloodsport and Peacemaker, who are landing on a different beach and coming in a different way.
I mean, I found that a little bit hard to swallow, I'll be honest, because obviously can't remember her name.
Amanda Waller?
Amanda Waller. Her right-hand person is Rick Flagg, but obviously she felt Rick Flagg was disposable, as too was Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
Which I kind of found that really quite hard to swallow. I could understand the others because they were weird.
yes, they certainly were. Well, it's funny because, you know, Rick Flag is expendable until he's not, because she then diverts the mission to save him. So it's kind of one of those, like, you know, I'd rather not lose him, but I'm willing to. But I mean, his entire role in that initial team is the misdirect for the audience. Is for you not to think that they are a sacrificial distraction. And if you didn't have Rick Flag and Harley Quinn on that fight and on that team, you might
twig. Yeah.
You might come to that conclusion a little bit quicker, in the sense of, you know, all of these are brand new characters, with potentially the exception of Captain Boomerang. I've got no connection to any of them, so them getting wiped out is just one of those things. The backwards and forwards, and how did you feel about the titles coming up?
You mean like Operation Harley and Operation? Yeah. I thought it was a nice way of introducing different segments and trying to make the movie work, if you like. Because obviously at one stage they kind of split into two.
It
was interesting. I managed to keep up to it, but I could see if some people would find that maybe a little bit confusing and disorientating.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have a problem with it. It was an interesting way of going through, but it did feel as if you have to keep directing the audience, then is there something you're missing from the film? It felt, I think one of the reasons I liked it is because it felt familiar to things like Scott Pilgrim. Who did it in a very different sort of way. And you know, it's a very comic booky style thing. But it did feel quite jumpy at points as they were kind of moving the story on, I think. I thought the interaction between Idris Elba's Bloodsport and John Cena's Peacemaker was brilliant. Dave DeSmulchin as Polka Dot Man gives us one of the scariest moments in the film when he reveals to us that they're all his mother.
that was quite funny, I must admit.
And you know, how Harley gets herself caught and in need of a rescue, I thought was really, really good. Because it is that character growth from the first Suicide Squad and also the emancipation of one Harley Quinn. You know, seeing Red Flag in a guy, so, you know, listened to her heart and shot him.
Without a blink,
you know, just because she knows that, you know, the wrong guy is not who she wants to be with. So, yeah, I thought that was quite an interesting kind of take on it.
Yeah, no, I agree. You honestly thought it was going to go in one way and then it just went the other way. Yeah. That was very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting film. Very interesting to watch the kind of the stories come through. Very interesting to watch kind of how they put it all in place. I don't think it was what I was expecting, and that's not me saying I didn't enjoy it or it wasn't good, but it kind of rocks you onto your heels from the moment it starts, and you probably don't kind of settle afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, it is possibly one of the best DC movies,
yeah,
to date. You know, in the modern era, you know, ever since Dark Knight Returns, I
was going to say, so me. If we take out the Batman films,
mm-hmm.
where does this rank in your DC?
That's a really difficult question. I quite liked Justice League. I quite liked Man of Steel. I loved Wonder Woman. I thought Aquaman was really good. Top three, I'd say.
Yeah, I think I'm in a similar place. So I enjoyed Shazam for what it was, but
yeah,
I think this was better. It's probably I think I'd probably say Wonder Woman, then maybe this, and then Aquaman.
Oh, so Justice League does not even make it top three. Interesting.
No. No, and the Snyder Cut even less. This is kind of where I feel that DC should be playing. It's far darker than the Marvel films, but still has a humor to it. I think it understands what it is a little bit more than some of the other ones.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, lots of action, brilliant acting, story was good. It was weird. There were certain elements of it which were just weird. I mean, Starro, I didn't know whether to feel sorry for it or whether to, you know, hate it. I just didn't get that. I mean, who was the big bad in all this? Was it Starro? Was it the American government? And Amanda Waller?
But I mean, that's you know, Amanda Waller's role in all of these films has been to be drastically unlikable. You know, they haven't tried to redeem her in any way, shape, or form, which I appreciate, because you know that kind of goes against the moment she chooses to sacrifice herself instead of whatever or whatever else like that, then it kind of takes away from what this is. So the fact that, you know, in every film there is her blowing up someone's head, I think is needed to work through. And you're right, you know, there is, and that's the peacemaker role in the film as well, isn't it? In the sense of he's a genocidal lunatic, but is on the side of America.
At no matter cost.
Yeah.
At whatever cost, yeah.
And I think that's you know, an interesting kind of play for him. And I think John Cena did so very well bringing Peacemaker to life. I mean, you know, it's very funny because I know going into it for the longest time, we've heard about kind of the Peacemaker series. And there's always been a little bit of kind of a, you know, question mark as to why out of all of them that's the character that resonated and you know, James Gunn felt there was more to say on. And then following it, you can kind of see why. you know, I'm a huge fan of Idris Elba, but Bloodsport was a little bit kind of one-dimensional in kind of how it fell through.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little bit disappointed. I mean, Idris Elba is a great actor. But yeah, you're right. It was just one play, to be honest. Reluctant leader, savior at the end.
Yeah, and you know, kind of lost his way ever so slightly when Rick Flagg was on the team because Rick took that kind of, you know, military leader role and then kind of, you know, took it back and blah, blah, blah. And again, it's what we saw with Will Smith in the first one, very, very similar to how they set up Deadshot, to the point where I did wonder, you know, again, looking at how the story had progressed as to whether it was a lift and drop and you know the original draft had Deadshot in it. Although according to some of the concept art and all the rest of it, that isn't the case. The original character was meant to be Deathstroke, it seems. Which I think would have been an interesting one as well. But yeah, so I thought Peacemaker had a little bit more interest to him than Deadshot did, than Bloodsport did.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. And obviously the post-credit scene completely makes sense now. But
Yes.
saying that, obviously watching the movie and watching him being shot by Bloodsport,
And
I
have a
kind
building
of
collapse on him.
yeah, I completely forgot. He can't be dead.
Well, I mean, they were very clever in the whole kind of, you know, maybe it's a prequel, maybe it's a sequel kind of thing. But no, you did kind of realize that you probably should have expected the end of credit scene when you saw the end of credit scene.
Very unlike DC.
Yes, gave a lot of freedom to James Gunn, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, overall, it is worth a watch. Definitely worth a watch. Will I watch it again? Yeah, I think I probably will.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think it's definitely worth checking out. Especially if you're listening to this podcast, which means you're probably into this sort of thing, so why wouldn't you?
Yes, T.
And it's yeah, T. And I do think that it's one that I'll probably watch again. I don't know yet whether I would watch the whole film or skip to scenes. So we shall find out, I guess. But overall, I think we're both giving it a thumbs up.
Indeed.
So yeah, Suicide Squad is currently in the cinema in the UK, the theatre in US as well as HBO Max, wherever HBO Max is. So find it and check it out. They are dying to save the world. That's the actual tagline. I can't take credit for that. But that will do for us for a week. We're going to go and work out whether we should watch the Suicide Squad or something else. No, well, actually, it's What If tomorrow, isn't it?
It is. Wow, that's come up quick. Yeah.
It has. It has. So we will be talking about Agent Carter next week, I am sure.
Or is it
Captain Carter.
Captain Britain?
Captain Carter.
No, it's Captain Carter.
And we will talk about the controversy of her taking over Captain America's Twitter feed for a couple of days. But until then, continue to look after yourself and each other, and we will speak to you next week. Bye-bye.
Cheerio.
Thank you.